Welcome to Baird's Global Investment Banking Podcast. I'm Dan Alfie, Managing Director at Baird. I'm an investment banker specializing in advising companies in the education and ed tech sectors. Today, continuing in Baird's podcast series, where we intend to share with you perspectives from thought leaders on topics we believe would be relevant to the world we live in today and the world we'll face in the future. Today on our podcast, I'll be speaking with Vanessa Webb from Oliver Wyman. Oliver Wyman is a global leader in management consulting, with offices in 60 cities across 29 countries. It combines deep industry knowledge with specialized expertise in strategy, operations, risk management, and organizational transformation. Vanessa is co-head of Oliver Wyman's global education practice. Her teams have worked on 30-plus deals over the past 18 months across the sector and with portfolio companies focusing on commercial effectiveness and operational improvement. So, Vanessa, maybe just to kick things off, give us sort of the state of higher ed prior to COVID-19. Definitely some challenges across the system as you think about folks think about the ROI, cost benefit, student debt burdens. Talk to us about the state of play and how COVID has exacerbated the challenges in the higher ed system.
It's a good question. I think a question that is top of mind for many today. If you think about over the last few years and what you see and hear about with higher ed institutions, there are about 30% of them who historically or recent years have been concerned with their financial stability. And it's really been driven by a combination of factors like slowing enrollments and increasing price sensitivity, slowing state funding, and a fairly fixed cost base. And, you know, more recently, over the last month, 80% are now concerned. And this goes with, if you think about what's happening this term, you've got students who are starting to ask for dollars back for room and board, and some schools have been given these rebates. Others are feeling the pressure to do so, and there are lawsuits out there. A lot of the schools have lost ancillary revenue like food and parking and sports revenue that they depend on. Alumni are making less donations, and even, you know, many of the larger universities have medical centers, and they've had to cut back on elective procedures, which creates a funding hole. And, you know, if we look forward to what's going to happen, you know, our outlook at least is that we expect that to get worse. For, you know, from an enrollment perspective, it's been a pretty miserable experience for undergrads. Many are thinking of taking the semester off next fall if this continues, if they need to stay online because it's not been a great experience. International students will be down. While you are likely to see some bright spots like vocational and grad enrollments, it's likely to be a tough year for many of these institutions, and you're going to, many more of them are going to have increasing financial concerns.
You know, you touched on part of this, which relates to just the actual numbers in enrollments, and folks thinking about deferments, et cetera. You know, what do you see as the outlook for enrollments this fall? You know, how is the admissions process working leading up to that? And, you know, do you see more folks, you know, delaying their school, return to school? Be interested to hear how you think about that.
I think it's a really good question because there are going to be a lot of puts and takes. And, you know, I think some people right now seem to be talking about COVID as one and done. And, you know, our healthcare team is projecting another wave. And, you know, we also think we're not likely to get out of this lockdown completely until we have the ability to test people, trace contacts and things of that nature. So expecting everyone to be back in class in the fall seems unlikely. So there are a lot of moving parts with respect to enrollment, and net, we think overall enrollments will decline next year, driven by two factors, which I touched on a little earlier. The first is the international students. So international students are full paying students. So their value to the school is their tuition, but also the fact that they do bring global perspective to the classroom, which is valued. And there you're potentially going to see a decline of 25% plus due to visa issues, travel restrictions, general political environment. And that'll be tough for these schools. And then you've got the incoming 18-year-olds and the sort of the traditional 18 to 22-year-old undergrads. And for the incoming folks, I think the latest I've seen is about 20% of them are saying they've changed their plans to attend full time. Some are looking to take gap years. Some are looking to attend but part time or closer to home or go to a community college first, instead of a traditional 4-year. And they tend to be, they're going to be more price sensitive, as a group, and they're likely to stay closer to home. And I think where you're going to see this most is with, in the 4-year privates who will often tend to get more students from out of state, in the publics that take more out of state students, and those are also the full paying students. So those are valuable students to the institution. And I think with the existing students, the undergrads, that many of them have just have had a miserable experience this spring and are thinking of taking the fall off until there's more certainty that they'll be back in class. And it's highlighted the for the traditional undergrad, the importance of the campus experience and all that comes with it, including the socialization and the other elements that are on campus. And I think to counteract the undergrads and the international students, the vocational 2-year, you're likely to see an increase in community colleges, for instance, in the for-profit, because just given the countercyclical nature of higher education, particularly in the vocational areas, people lose their jobs and have to go back to school and reskill and upskill. And then similarly with postgrads, potentially an increase also there, but likely with some deeper discounts. So, I think this will be fluid and things will continue to evolve and change over the next few months. But I think next year is going to be a challenging year for these schools.
Vanessa, maybe that's the right sort of transition, that it is going to be a challenging fall for these folks. But the schools obviously have very large physical footprints. How do you see the kind of accelerated shift to online affecting the future for physical brick and mortar campuses? What do you think this looks like?
I don't think it's going to change that much for the students for the traditional undergrads, because if anything, and partly because this is not the mode of comfort for a lot of their professors, the quality of their education and the engagement has not been great. I mean, you hear countless stories of professors not wanting to get on video not communicating well with students, having trouble adapting to how you lead a lecture, a class online versus in person, where you've really got to take different approaches. And I think they miss the environment that they're in, which is why I think many are thinking of deferring next fall if it's likely that they'll have to be online. And we know that when students pick their schools, the physical environment of the school is important to many. I mean, it's sort of amazing, but for an 18-year-old, things like the food and the campus and the sports do matter, and our sense is those will continue to matter. Now, I think from a school perspective, that becomes tough in this environment when you've got less dollars and you've got to figure out where to invest them. But for the traditional student who is still a large percentage of total enrollments, I think this remains important. In other areas, in particular for the working student, the non-traditional student, online is an attractive option, but it is already an attractive option. I mean, in a lot of the work that we've done, where we've done surveys or conjoints and asked working students or potentially working students to trade off on various elements of their education and what's the preferred modality. For most, it's now online. So online is here to stay. It will grow. I don't know that this will necessarily turbocharge it, though it might in the near term if physical is not an option.
So Vanessa, you had talked about, the community and getting a sense for campus being one of the areas that students are struggling with. You can see solutions like virtual campus tours being an area that will benefit from this. Are there other third-party solutions you see as being winners, beneficiaries of this, and conversely, solutions that you think are going to see some more challenges going forward?
So I think you can think of this, Dan, in two buckets. The first is those software and service providers who are solving an institution's revenue challenge. And these software and service providers have been top of mind for the last five to seven years as the financial stability and the financial challenges have been more of an issue. This is going to accelerate it further. And so the areas that where you see them solving these issues are in things like recruitment. So think of an EAB and who has an offering called Royal, and what they do is they help undergrad institutions differentiate in their outreach to students and help them in the conversion of their students. Someone like Ruffalo Cody who does something similar. Higher ed who helps with lead generation of non-traditional students and the list goes on. And the value that all of these provide is they help these institutions find the students, and they give you the skills, they give you the access to them that they would not otherwise have, and it enables them to be more competitive. A second area would be the OPM, so the online program management providers who, I think as you know, help an institution develop and grow an online program by historically offering really a full service solution where they come in, they have a revenue share, they give you the upfront capital for the program, they help you recruit the student, convert the student, they may help you set up your CRM for how you run multiple starts, they help you retain the student, and that becomes particularly important in this environment because online is often an area of growth for these schools and they don't know how to do it. The offering is not relevant to the existing student base today because the most important part of the offering is the most valued part of the offering is the upfront capital and the recruitment. But it's very relevant for attracting new students. And I think what you'll see and what really you'll continue to see is an evolution of the model where they started off, it was a one size fits all full service model with a revenue share. And now it's sort of different offerings based on the needs of different institutions. Some need a full service. Some just need the recruitment. Some need a couple components of the offering. Some want to do a fixed fee. So I think you'll see increased flexibility in the offering, but I also think you'll see increased demand if these providers are seeing more demand recently. Another area would be around this, how do you grow enrollments is around the retention. And retention software solutions like Civitas or SSC, who are helping schools identify the students who may be at risk and then helping them take action, letting the advisor know, based on whether a student has logged in or missed attendance or grades are slipping. So you can make sure you're paying more attention to them and retain them. And then the two other areas where most top of mind from the perspective of enrollments are international students. So take something like Pathway programs who help you find the students, who work with agents all over the world to help you find those students. And then where needed, help the students get up to speed on English or other areas where they may be deficient so that they can be admitted to the university. So you won't see that one in the near term go up because of the issues we discussed earlier, but I think you will see an increase in the midterm. And then the last area is alumni outreach, which most institutions have alumni software, utilize alumni services right now to figure out how best and how to optimize, how to go after your alumni for donations, but given the need for more revenues, you can see them investing further in this in order to drive an ROI or to drive more donations. And then that's sort of the, as you think about it from the revenue side, solutions that solve those types of challenges for the institution. And then I think the secondary is around remote learning resources, where you're seeing an uptick now. And what we see in the market, and also as we follow some of these search terms, is there's real demand for expanded LMS functionality that are more necessary, and that for courses to go online and for students to work remotely. We've seen search terms go up for things like video capture, virtual campus tours, which I think you referenced, mental health and wellness tours, online course software, course designers, a PD for teaching online. So everything that is necessary to help these institutions offer a higher quality educational experience for the students, I think you're going to see continued investment in, because these schools, they don't know, but I think there's also a high probability that for a portion of the year next year, they're going to need to go online, and the expectation is going to be that they're a lot better than they are right now.
And I guess, you know, just stepping up a level a bit, there are some challenges obviously traditional higher ed is going to have. At the same time, we continue to hear about challenges with 21st century skills for workforce. The traditional schools continue to fill that gap going forward. Are there other business models you think are sort of better positioned to help students fill that void, bridge that gap?
So I'm always skeptical of when we talk about the demise of higher ed. I don't think this is the demise of higher ed, but I think there are a lot of tools and types of short courses as we think about reskilling and upskilling that also have real value to them. And will particularly is in this changing economy. And I think if you think about shorter courses and shorter course models, you know, to us, we see a couple of challenges with them, and it's particularly with B2C, which is, and is I think part of the reason that you don't see that many B2C that have reached scale and profitability. And the first is there are only so many students or individuals that to which a given course is relevant. So when you look at areas like IT, there's actually some fairly sizable areas, and we saw this with the boot camps a few years ago when all those popped up around the coding. But then it starts to get you start to get pretty small pretty quickly per course, and so it can get expensive to try to identify people to whom a given course is relevant. And then it just in general, and from a B2C perspective, it can be fairly costly to find these potential students. And so I think the models that are arguably the more interesting are the ones that have a link to an institution or links to employers. So something like a Trilogy, which is focused in IT, has links to the school, so you can leverage a school's brand name. Also has links to some employers, and that can make it a little easier to find the students, but it also has sizable courses for which you can enroll students. Someone like Pluralsight, which is more of a workflow tool, but can also be used to upskill. And then when you look at others like Udacity and General Assembly and Udemy, and you know, a lot of these guys are making the pivot towards employers, which in this environment helps, but is not solving as much the problem at hand. It's obviously a big part of the problem is the millions who are now unemployed. So all to say, I think there is a great place for them, and they solve a need, and I think are quite complementary to the higher education offering.
Mindful of time, and I'm sure this one we could probably go on for a long time, but curious, you know, your view in sort of comparing, contrasting how higher ed has contended with these challenges versus K through 12, is thinking about kind of the remote environment. What does the future look like in your opinion for the K through 12 ecosystem?
K 12 dynamics are pretty different. You don't have the same enrollment risks, though you do have a heightened risk of dropouts in the higher grades. But it's, I think the magnitude of the issue is very different from higher ed. And I think from a vendor perspective, there's arguably more opportunities for many in the market to help solve the issues. And things like that, we see the value prop of digital supplemental increasing, the value proposition of the LMS increasing. We do see basal publishers being challenged. I could go on, but I know we're running out of time maybe we need to do a part two of this podcast, Dan.
Well, Vanessa, we may take you up on exactly that. I think a follow-up on the K-12 space would be a great idea. But as always, great insights today. Really thank you for joining us and for sharing your thoughts on the space.
Thanks very much, Dan. I enjoyed it.
Robert W. Baird & Company Incorporated is a member SBIC. Robert Baird Limited is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For more information, go to rwbaird.com.